When you sit in the audience of a theater production, you basically just see magic.
Right. Oh, absolutely. It's designed to look effortless.
Yeah, exactly. The actors hit their marks perfectly, the lighting shifts at exactly the right moment, and the story just pulls you in. You don't see the frantic stagehands sprinting around in the dark.
Right, or the panicked under a minute costume changes happening right in the wings.
Exactly. And right now, I think it's fair to say that almost everyone using AI agents is just sitting in the audience. They see the magic. But today, we are taking you backstage.
Which is so needed right now. I mean, we live in an industry completely obsessed with making large language models smarter. We talk constantly about, you know, reasoning capabilities and parameter count.
Well, constantly. It's all anyone talks about on social media.
Right. But we largely ignore the structural machinery that actually makes these models useful in the real world. Mm. A brilliant model without a robust harness, well, it's really just raw potential.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because we have a genuinely revealing source article to guide us today. It was published on March 31st, 2026, and it's titled, "A Coding Agent is Not a Prompt, It's a Stateful Query Loop."
Such a great title, honestly.
It really is. And it's an incredibly detailed analysis of a snapshot of the Claude Code runtime. So our mission for this deep dive is to completely rewire how you think about AI agents.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you thought building a coding agent was simply about writing a really clever giant prompt and giving it access to some tools.
Which, let's be honest, is what most people think.
Oh, totally. But if that's your mindset, we are going to show you the complex, highly resilient engineering actually running the show. The core premise here is that the model itself isn't the product. The harness, like the runtime environment wrapping the model, is the actual product.
Which completely flips the standard narrative on its head.
It does, because the popular mental model most people have is comfortable, but it's fundamentally flawed. It treats agent architecture as a straight line.
Right, like a simple 1-2 step.
Mm. Yeah, the assumption is that you build a massive system prompt. You give the model a list of tools it can use. You let it, quote unquote, think. It executes those tool calls, and then it just returns an answer to you.
It treats an AI agent like a vending machine.
Yeah.
You know, you put a prompt in, you press a button, and you get an action or an answer out. But reading through the reality of this Claude Code snapshot, it's not a vending machine at all.
Not even close.
The reality is far more like a frantic line cook in a really busy restaurant kitchen.
I love that analogy.
Right, because the cook isn't just taking an order and blindly handing out a plate. They're constantly tasting the soup, adjusting the heat on the burner, checking the incoming tickets.
Snowing out a burnt piece of toast and starting over mid-stride.
Exactly. They are managing chaos.
What's fascinating here is that the vending machine analogy smuggles in this hidden assumption. It assumes that a user request is mostly just one single pass through the model.
Just in and out.
Right. But when you look at a serious coding agent, that linear flow completely falls apart. It is a state machine. When you make a request, the system enters a loop.
A very complex loop.
Extremely. Before the model even sees your prompt, the runtime is already preparing the context. And it might actually shrink or rewrite that context so the AI isn't overwhelmed.
Wait, before it even sees the prompt?
Yes, exactly. Then it calls the model, streams partial outputs, executes tools, updates its own internal memory, decides if a follow-up is needed, attempts recoveries if something broke.
And then continues this entire cycle until a terminal condition is met.
Exactly. It's a continuous multi-step loop.
So what is actually orchestrating all of this behind the scenes? Because our source looks at a specific piece of evidence from the Claude Code snapshot to explain this. It's a file called query.ts.
Yeah, the author points out that query.ts is probably the most revealing file in the entire snapshot, and that's because of what it assumes about the world.
Which is that the world is broken.
Pretty much. It is written with the mindset of an engineer who absolutely does not trust the happy path.
And the happy path is just that rare scenario where everything works perfectly on the first try, right?
Yeah, which almost never happens in real code. So this file assumes the session will need multiple internal turns. It assumes tool results are going to eat up too much context and will need strict budgeting.
It assumes the streaming data from the model might just fail mid-flight.
Right.
Like it's preparing for disaster at every millisecond.
Totally. And to survive that disaster, the source lists this massive amount of mutable state that the system carries around.
Just to clarify for anyone unfamiliar, mutable state is basically the data and history that the system actively changes and updates as it moves through the loop.
Right. Spot on. It carries an intense amount of baggage. It tracks the messages, obviously, but it also tracks things like compaction tracking.
Which is what exactly?
That is a mechanism where the runtime remembers which parts of the conversation it has already compressed, so it doesn't waste time trying to summarize them all over again.
Oh, wow. That makes sense.
Yeah, and it monitors output token recovery counts.
Okay, let's break that down. What does an output token recovery count actually mean in practice? Like, for the user?
Well, imagine the AI gets stuck in a loop and just starts endlessly writing useless code. It hits its limit, the maximum number of output tokens it's allowed to generate.
Which costs money.
Exactly. So the runtime tracks how many times this has happened. If it happens too often, the runtime knows to step in, cut the model off, and try a different strategy.
It's like a babysitter.
Kind of, yeah. The system also tracks pending tool summaries, the overall turn count, and the exact technical reason why it moved from step 3 to step 4. It logs literally everything.
But hold on, doesn't that violate basic software design principles? Because from what I understand, software engineers treat statelessness like the Holy Grail.
They absolutely do.
Right. You want clean, independent API calls where you don't have to lug around all this heavy, messy historical baggage. Why would the engineers behind this runtime intentionally drag all this state around? Well, stateless APIs are elegant, sure, but long-running coding work is just chaotic. Agent behavior is fundamentally path-dependent.
Meaning what you do next depends on what you just did.
Exactly. If you ask an agent to refactor a massive, messy code base, what it needs to do next depends entirely on what tools it just used, or what files it already read.
Or what text it had to summarize to save space.
Right. Or whether a previous terminal command just threw a permission error 2 seconds ago. You cannot express that dynamic, evolving reality if every step pretends it's a fresh, clean API call.
You need the paranoid mindset that tracks every single shift in state.
You really do.
Okay, so if the system is constantly hoarding this messy state just to survive a crash, how does it actually handle the inevitable failures? Because reaching out into the real world to read files or run code, that seems like the exact place where things would break.
Oh, it is. And that's why recoverability is the beating heart of the main loop. It is not an afterthought. It's not a minor edge case. And one of the most counterintuitive examples of this is how the system handles errors.
Counterintuitive how?
Normally in software development, you are taught to fail fast. If there's an error, you surface it immediately so the user can see it and fix it.
Right. You want the red text on the screen so you know it broke.
Exactly. But this agent runtime actively withholds errors on purpose.
So it's hiding the problem from the user to buy time.
Yes. If the model hits a recoverable error, say a prompt too long condition, or a media size issue, or it maxes out its output tokens, the system doesn't necessarily throw a giant red error message on your screen.
It holds that error back.
Right. Yeah. Its own internal recovery subsystem kicks in to try and fix it behind the scenes. It might try something called reactive compaction.
Okay, let's pause on reactive compaction. How does that actually work behind the scenes?
Think of the AI's memory like a whiteboard.
Right.
It can only fit so much text.
Okay, I'm picturing a whiteboard.
When it's analyzing a complex project, it fills up that whiteboard incredibly fast. Reactive compaction is like the runtime stepping in, erasing the top half of the whiteboard, and just writing a single sticky note that summarizes what was there.
Like, we checked the login module, no bugs found.
Exactly. Now it has room to keep working. The runtime shrinks the context and then retries the exact same task without you ever knowing there was a hiccup.
That is wild. It just handles it quietly.
Yeah. By withholding the error and trying to self-correct, the runtime optimizes for keeping the agent alive. Because when you're dealing with a long-running task that might take 20 minutes, an immediate crash at minute 19 is the worst possible user experience.
Oh, I would be furious if it crashed at minute 19. But what happens if it's right in the middle of talking to you, like it's streaming a response and something fails mid-flight?
That is a much trickier scenario.
Right, because the source mentions a fascinating mechanism for this called tombstoning. And the way I pictured it, it's like, imagine a ship's logbook. It's like crossing out a half-written incorrect sentence in the logbook so the next ship doesn't misread it and steer the ship into an iceberg.
That is actually a brilliant analogy, because a half-streamed assistant message is incredibly dangerous. It is not just harmless text.
How so? Give me an example.
Well, let's say the AI is writing a structured JSON script to update a database. It gets halfway through. It writes the opening bracket, the first few data keys.
And then a network error kills the stream.
Boom! The stream dies. If the runtime just leaves that broken, half-finished code in the transcript, the next time the AI reads its own history, it tries to parse that broken string and fails.
Oh, so every subsequent API call is going to break because the history is corrupted.
Precisely. Tombstoning isolates that poison. The runtime explicitly emits a signal to invalidate and bury those orphan partial messages so they don't poison the transcript.
Wow. And the source also points out that even blocking these errors is conditional. Like, the loop doesn't just look at a giant file and say, context too large, I give up.
No, it doesn't give up that easily.
Right. It stops and checks its own state. It asks itself things like, did compassion already happen? Or is reactive recovery enabled for this specific session? Or even, if I block this process here, will it cause a deadlock in the entire system?
And that conditionality is messy. It's full of if-then caveats. But it is entirely necessary if you want the product to survive contact with reality.
So we've explored how the system remembers everything with mutable state and how it survives disasters through these hidden recovery mechanisms. Let's look at how it actually acts. Like, how does it interact with the outside world?
This is where things really shift. The crucial shift in perspective here is realizing that tool execution isn't something that happens outside the loop. It actually is the loop.
Tool execution is the loop itself.
Yeah. The pipeline for executing a tool is staggering. The system doesn't just hand a tool call to a helper function and, you know, twiddle its thumbs waiting for an answer.
Right. It runs this massive gauntlet of checks first. It validates the schema of the request to make sure the format is exactly right.
It runs pre-tool hooks and post-tool hooks.
And just for anyone listening, a hook is basically a piece of code that the system runs right before or right after an event. It's kind of like a bouncer checking IDs at the door before the LLM is even allowed to execute the code.
That's a great way to put it. It resolves permission decisions. It might even modify the future context based on what the tool returns.
And it also runs what are called speculative classifiers.
Oh, yeah. The speculative classifiers are brilliant.
Yes. I was so amazed by this. What exactly is a speculative classifier doing in this context?
So a speculative classifier is a smaller, faster predictive model that runs ahead of the main process. It looks at the tool the AI wants to use and predicts whether the agent will even have permission to run it.
Wait, it predicts if it'll be denied before even trying?
Exactly. For example, if the AI wants to delete a sensitive file, the speculative classifier looks at that and predicts, the user is definitely going to deny this permission.
So it just stops it right there.
Right. Instead of wasting time and compute power spinning up the tool, waiting for a user prompt, and then getting a failure, it preempts the whole process. It saves massive amounts of time and tokens.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because if the tool execution is this heavily guarded by the runtime, with speculative classifiers and pre-hooks and post-hooks and context modifiers, all acting like bouncers at the door, is the LLM actually in charge? Or is the runtime the real boss here?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, think about what an event loop does in traditional computer science.
Okay.
An event loop is a programming construct that basically waits for and dispatches events or messages in a program. It continuously reads state, processes events, dispatches work, mutates its internal memory, handles exceptions, and decides whether to continue.
Which sounds exactly like what we've been talking about.
Because it is. The agent runtime is doing all of that. The best analogy the author found for this entire system isn't a chatbot with tools. That's the old mental model. The correct analogy is an event loop with a language model inside it.
Wow. So the runtime is absolutely the boss.
Entirely the boss. The language model is really just a highly capable worker taking tickets from the event loop.
It's just processing tickets.
Yeah. The event loop hands the LLM a highly curated, compacted history and says, based on this, what is the next step? The LLM makes a decision, and then the event loop takes over again to execute it safely.
This perfectly explains why maintaining a pristine transcript matters so much, and why tool calls have to be centralized and managed by the runtime, not the model itself.
Exactly. The model can't be trusted with the raw state.
So, having completely deconstructed the mechanics of this backstage chaos, we need to bring it back directly to the listener. How does this shift in perspectives actually help you understand or build better AI agents?
Well, the most actionable lesson here is a complete change in how you approach problem solving in AI. When you are designing or debugging an agent, you really should not start by asking, what should my system prompt say?
Instead, the most important question you can ask is, what state do I need to carry between internal turns?
Yes, because when you force yourself to answer that question, you suddenly realize all the heavy lifting your runtime has to do.
like knowing which tools are currently in progress.
Right. You have to track which errors were already retried so you don't get stuck in an infinite loop. You have to know what parts of the chat history have been summarized and what parts of the transcript can still be trusted.
The source actually has this incredible quote. It says, "Most real agent bugs are runtime bugs wearing prompt-shaped masks."
I love that quote so much.
It's so true. And the author argues that shrinking the model's job by giving all these responsibilities to the runtime is actually a very good thing.
It's essential because the runtime absorbs all the mechanical, boring infrastructure problems. The error recovery, repairing the transcript, ordering the events.
And that lets the LLM focus on what it is actually good at, which is choosing actions, synthesizing information, generating the actual code, and planning the next steps.
Right. Let the model think. Let the runtime manage.
Wait. Are we letting prompt engineers off the hook too easily here? I mean, if I'm a developer and my agent generates terrible code or hallucinate a weird function, how do I know if I actually just need to fix my prompt or if it's one of these runtime bugs in a prompt-shaped mask?
Well, this raises an important question. And the answer is that you have to look at the state machine before you blame the prompt.
Check the loop first.
Exactly. Before you go tweaking the adjectives in your system instructions, trying to sound more authoritative to the AI.
Like typing, "You are an expert coder," in all caps.
Yeah, exactly. Before you do that, you have to look at the loop. Is there a partial output from a failed stream, like a tombstone issue, that is polluting the transcript?
Or is the agent failing because the retry logic for a specific tool timeout is just missing entirely?
Right. Did your reactive compaction accidentally erase a crucial piece of context? You cannot fix a plumbing issue by talking louder to the water. You have to check the pipes.
You can't fix a plumbing issue by talking louder to the water. That perfectly captures it.
So let's recap this journey we've been on. We started with the illusion of the single pass prompt. You know, the comfortable idea that you just ask an AI a question, it uses a tool and gives you a neat answer.
Which we now know is a complete myth.
Total myth. And what we discovered backstage is a paranoid, highly resilient state machine. It acts exactly like an event loop to protect the LLM from the chaotic, error-prone reality of actual coding work. So what does this all mean?
It means we have to accept an uncomfortable truth about where AI architecture is heading.
Okay, I'm ready.
Once you accept that an agent is a stateful loop heavily reliant on its internal memory, you realize that performance and cost are not just secondary details. They are structural constraints.
It changes the whole foundation.
It does. Which brings us to the most mind-bending, provocative detail tucked at the very end of our source material. Yes, the concept of fake tool results. This completely broke my brain when I read it. Walk us through how injecting a fake tool result actually helps a system like this.
Well, it all comes down to a concept called prompt caching. So normally when you send a massive prompt to an AI, like an entire code base, it takes an enormous amount of time and money for the massive graphics cards in the cloud to process all that text.
Right. It's very computationally expensive.
Super expensive. So prompt caching is a trick where the system saves that pre-processed text in its memory. That way, the next time you ask a question about that same code base, it's drastically cheaper and faster.
But there's a catch, right?
A huge catch. The cache only works if the prefix, basically the beginning of your prompt, is perfectly identical to the last one.
Like down to the exact character.
Down to the exact character. Now imagine a complex AI agent that wants to explore multiple different solutions at the exact same time. It spins up several forked workers.
Which are basically child processes trying different ideas.
Mm-hmm. Right. But if each worker runs its own unique tools, their chat transcripts instantly become different. They no longer match.
So the prefixes diverge.
Exactly. They can no longer share that massive cache, and your computing costs just skyrocket.
So how do fake tool results solve this?
The engineers do something brilliant. They create a central orchestrator that injects a fake tool result into the shared history. It essentially tells all the different worker processes, hey, just assume the tool returned this placeholder value.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because all the workers see the exact same fake result injected into their transcripts, their histories remain completely identical.
So they can all share the same cache prefix.
Yes. They share the same massive cache prefix, saving enormous amounts of compute power while still exploring different ideas in the background.
That is absolutely brilliant. It really makes you wonder, what does it mean for the future of artificial intelligence when prompt caching is no longer just a neat little optimization to make things run a bit faster?
It becomes the core design.
Exactly. What happens when manipulating caches through fake tool results and meticulously engineered state loops becomes the actual foundational architecture of Sirius software.
So it's a whole new world.
It leaves you realizing we are in a completely different paradigm. We're moving from chatting with an oracle to engineering an entire ecosystem around it. It's no longer about just watching the play on stage. It's about mastering the backstage chaos. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Keep looking under the hood. Keep questioning the systems working behind the scenes. And remember that sometimes the real genius isn't the chef. It's the line cook managing the fire. Take care.